Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin. We're Wednesday, April the 6th. And as usual, I'm with Arpin Basu. Hello, my friend. How are you today?
I'm good, man. I'm good. April the 6th means about roughly 3 weeks left in this Canadian season, which at certain points seemed like it would never end. And here we are. We're at close to the finish line, and suddenly it seems like the Canadiens could use more time. The way that they, even though they lost 6-3 to the Ottawa Senators last night, there are things happening with this team that just, you know, that just make you wonder, maybe if they had another 15-20 games left, what could this team do? But I think for many people at the end of this season can't come soon enough. But I think for the players, playing under Martin St-Louis, I bet you they wish that they could play for another couple of weeks.
I got a public service announcement for you, man. And for everybody who's listening, that's why it's public. My season is over. Mm. So this will be my last podcast before the end of the regular season. I need to step away from the beat for a little bit. I'm going to go abroad for family reasons. So that's why people are not going to read me in The Athletic for the next 3 weeks. And I'm not going to be doing this podcast. So it's going to be, you know, I hand you the torch. It's up to you to, raise it high.
Yeah.
So that's it. So I just wanted to let people know if they wonder where, how come he's not writing. Well, it is what it is. So I'm not, I'll be back right after the season's over, actually. So heading into the draft, all the draft related stuff and the postseason stuff for the Canadiens, I'm going to be there for that. But the games, it's all yours, buddy.
Yeah, I take the torch. It's only fair because I left for 3 weeks at one point for unfortunate reasons. It's actually a month ago today that my dad died. But you know, you took that torch and held it very high and covered for me. So I'm going to do the same now. But you'll be missed. I don't know. This podcast might go a lot smoother if I have no one to disagree with me. I'll just talk for like an hour, and I'll have no one pushing back, and I'll just be like, oh, Well, that went a lot. That's nice. I'm right, yeah. I guess I'm right. No one told me I'm wrong. So, but no, that's obviously right. the podcast will suffer, but I will try to make it so that it doesn't. I'm trying to line up some guests for Marc-Antoine's absence. So please do tune in every Wednesday. And if I don't line up some guests, even though I'm working on it, yeah, you'll get to listen to me talk for an hour instead of the two of us.
Okay. All right. Back to hockey. You mentioned right off the bat the Canadiens' loss against the Senators last night. I wanted to bring up Brendan Gallagher. He was the topic of both of our columns last night. It's okay. I mean, even though we could have a variety of angles, but we chose to write on the same thing, and that's just fine by me. But I feel as though, I don't know if some people might be concerned or might take exception of the fact that Martin St-Louis is trying to, the term that he used is rewire Brendan Gallagher and encourage him to develop new aspects of his play in order to have a broader range of possibilities on the ice. There are certain things that he's been very good at over the course of his career. Putting pressure on the opponent on the forecheck, crashing the net, being an annoying presence, doing puck recoveries, being good at one-on-one battles along the boards too. So that's the Gallagher we know. But now, Martin St-Louis says you don't have to always be that guy. If you are the first one up, if you are F1 on the forecheck, then it will be you. But it's not because you are Brendan Gallagher that you have to become F1 all the time. And in some occasions, it's okay to take a step back and look for soft areas on the ice, pockets that are a bit more open and remain open for a scoring chance, So it seems to go a little bit against the grain from the type of player Gallagher is. And Gallagher himself didn't seem to say to think that it was much of a change. It's an addition, probably more than a change in his eyes. But what do you make of a 29-year-old hockey player who would, integrate or that sort of change at this point in his career? Is there anything risky about that?
I don't know about risky. It's definitely a challenge, and honestly, I don't think anyone put it better than Martin St-Louis did himself last night. So let's listen to him talk about it when asked that question.
I'm trying to rewire him a little bit. Where I know, like I said, he's a really good net front guy. He's a really good F1 on the forecheck. As you progress in this league and you play your later years, you always try to evolve. You don't lose what you are as a player, but you have to try to evolve. And is it easier to learn a language at 2 years old? Absolutely, but you can still learn language at 24, 25. You just got to be willing to put in the work. And I think Gally wants to.
So that's actually, I think, a perfect analogy. Language learning skills is, every study has shown, obviously, and just common sense would dictate that it's easier to pick up a language early on in life. But there are many, many examples of people picking up a language later in life. And that's what Brendan Gallagher is trying to do. He's trying to pick up kind of Martin St-Louis' language of hockey. And it's interesting to hear him talk about some of the changes and how much of Martin St-Louis comes out when he's talking about it, saying, he was talking about, controlling, managing his speed the way Martin St-Louis does in order to be between coverage, talking about layers. But I think the main thing that was interesting, and actually it was from a question that you asked, is Martin St-Louis kind of realizing that it's just not realistic that Brendan Gallagher can continue playing the way he has and have a long career, especially for someone who's in the first year of a 6-year contract. You'd like to see him get to the end of that contract and still remain an effective player, one that's worth more than $6 million a year. So Martin St-Louis himself had to go through that process as a player and remained effective well into his 30s. Not only effective, but like an elite player in the NHL. And so he definitely knows what he's talking about. And this is kind of the value of having a Hall of Fame player as a coach, is that I don't know how many coaches could go to Brendan Gallagher and say, hey, we want you to tone it down a little bit and have him actually listen. And he clearly is listening because A, of the person that's telling him, but also B, I think Brendan Gallagher's cognizant, like he mentioned it, you know, on Monday, how, you know, this was his fourth absence from the lineup this season. Obviously, one of them was COVID related, but the other three have been injury related. And this is a player who prided himself on his durability for years because of his incredible physical fitness, and just his preparedness for the season, and you know, and pain tolerance. Just the fact it took a lot to get him out of the lineup. He can see later in life how that's becoming more difficult. So maybe that's another factor that has him welcoming sort of a different approach, playing away from the puck more, which is completely bonkers to hear Brendan Gallagher say he was too close to the puck tonight, which is what he said after the game, because
yeah,
that's his bread and butter, his whole life. He's made a living being close to the puck. And, you know, it's like stark contrast to Jonathan Drouin, who was trying to be a player who was closer to the puck more often. And so it's an interesting transition, and it kind of underscores the value of the Canadiens having Martin Saint-Louis over the final, you know, the second half of the season. It's things like this that he can implement that can actually be fully implemented next season, where after a full summer of training, whereas Gallagher said, he has a chance to build his body up and get it better prepared than he did last summer when he barely had a summer, and then try and watch him implement these changes into his game, could be very interesting on several levels for the Canadiens, because there's another factor here is that, you know, if the Canadiens are going into a rebuild, you know, much like Jeff Petrie, whose game turned around and made it more realistic that maybe the Canadiens could find a trade partner for him, if the Canadiens and Brendan Gallagher kind of mutually decide that maybe, you know, maybe the rebuild's not for him, having him find a new aspect of his game and become a productive goal scorer again could maybe perhaps down the road help that discussion move along with other teams.
Yeah. I think the stamina aspect of it to me is interesting, because we can see Brendan Gallagher seems to empty the tank a little bit quicker than some of his teammates on the ice in his shifts. Uh-huh. And I think that when he points out to the fact that he had a short summer and never quite was able to build his body for the rigors of an 82 game schedule. That's one of the impacts. The stamina and the skating efficiency are probably the two items that seem to be at a drop compared to previous years for Brendan Gallagher, and have led a lot of people to think that his decline has started and it's irreversible. On the other end, Gallagher is only 29 years old. You could argue he's an old 29, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he's 29 years old, and
he'll be 30 in a month. Just saying.
Yeah,
he's got a month. He's a month away from 30.
Fine, he's 30 years old. He's uber competitive, and I think that he's not going to go down without a fight. And he's going to find ways before we can close the books on this guy and say he's done, he's washed up, his contract's a burden, ship him out of town. I think he's going to go. He won't go down without a fight, and he's going to try to find solutions how to adapt his game. Having a restful, an effective, productive summer is part of the equation. But I think that what Martin Saint-Louis is proposing to him is also a part of that solution, because he can go full on like this, like he used to, anymore, and remain as effective as he was. Just based on the sample size, it's not a big sample size because he's been hurt quite a bit, even under Martin Saint-Louis, but with the sample size that new coach has on Gallagher, I think it's relevant to say, you know what, pick your spots. Save your energy for the right time. And it's always, and it comes from a man, and I know we've pointed it out before, but it bears repeating, that Martin Saint-Louis' prime quality was to get better over time, over the course of his career, and building his game up incessantly, even past the age of 30. Uh-huh. And I think that this really percolates throughout the whole organization. And it's true for, it can be true for Gallagher. It can be true for depth defensemen such as Corey Schooneman. You know, you're never too old to get better. And this idea of the comparison with the language is another image that really resonates into the same idea, is that you're never too old to learn. And I think that based on that, they're going to try to milk everything they got out of Gallagher's assets as a player. And I think that I'm not ready to say that he's done. I think that it's going to be extremely interesting to see how he takes the challenge and comes back and tries to rebound, next season. If next season is the same as this year, well, then I think that he's in serious trouble. But to say that it's done, no. I think that that type of guy, that type of, how he's been described as a warrior many times, with this type of competitor, at the very least, is that he deserves the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the last part of that clip that we played for Bartek Saint-Louis, where he says, Galley's willing to put in the work. That's the beauty of this situation, is that you are going to have a receptive player on the other end in terms of if it's presented to him properly, which I have no doubt, I have no reason to believe it hasn't been. But, listen, this is a way for you to extend your effectiveness and to be and Gallagher takes being an important player on this team very seriously. And he knows better than most to what extent your leadership skills are limited when you're not actually contributing on the ice, which is something that's never applied to him until now. But, we saw it in the playoffs the last couple of years, especially in the bubble, where, as it turns out, he was playing through a hip injury. But, he was not able to be the same kind of leading voice for the team because he himself was not producing when it counts the most. And so, rekindling that pride in his own game is an important factor in making Brendan Gallagher an effective player, because then all the other aspects of Brendan Gallagher that are so effective in a dressing room and among younger teammates, they shine through when he's actually performing on the ice. When he's not, I'm sure they're still there, but they're not quite as impactful, right? Because you can't feel comfortable going to a young guy and saying, hey, you're not pulling your weight when you yourself feel that you're not pulling your own weight. And so it's an important offseason for Brendan Gallagher and for the Canadians. And I agree with you. I'm not willing to write him off just yet, but he's definitely reached a tipping point in his career. A 30th birthday is never a welcome birthday for a professional athlete. It's something they'd rather not think about. And it's definitely a sign that you're closer to the end than you are to the beginning, which is true in Brendan Gallagher's case, no matter what happens. But I'm not willing to concede that he is a lost cause by any stretch of the imagination. And if anyone's going to be motivated to prove people wrong, as he has his entire life, much like his coach did his entire life, it would be Brendan Gallagher, because he's thrived on this notion that people believe he can't do something. And it's always pushed him to prove that he can do that thing. And not only can he do that thing, he can do it better than you ever could have imagined that he could do it. So, I think I speak for both of us when I say we always have time for Brendan Gallagher. And I think his ability, this adapting of his game is something I feel that he's going to really embrace. And I guess we'll have to see how it turns out, but I would have trouble betting against Brendan Gallagher. That's kind of how I see it. And just to
I don't know, maybe it's an unfair comparison, but I prefer the odds of Gallagher bouncing back and having a good season next year than waiting for Yoel Armia to pan out. Yoel Armia is just slightly younger, but you're waiting for you. There's a track record from one player that says, there's no real point in waiting for something that, you know, putting the tools together and making him into like the player that he could have become is not likely to happen. Whereas with Gallagher, you got it. Not only do you have a track record, but you got an engine, a motor that will drive that motivation to come back to the standards that he's put on himself. Mm-hmm. And that's not to be neglected.
No, absolutely. Speaking of guys I wouldn't bet against, we are on the verge of Carey Price returning and playing his first game. He, along with Gallagher, he has been the face of the Canadians for a very long time. Gallagher, a close second, I think, in that pecking order in terms of who has been the face of the franchise, who's been the voice of the franchise. There's a lot of chatter out there, and you know, circumstances are somewhat similar. You know, if there's some question as to whether Carey Price is willing to go through a rebuild, there's some question as to whether he will be traded in the offseason. But as he returns, I think it's important to point out, you know, I see a lot of people still kind of talking about how, you know, wondering why Carey Price is bothering to come back and play this season, which is very much the same conversation that was going on the last time he had a long-term injury due to a knee injury, or a long-term absence due to a knee injury. It's very much the same discourse. Why bother? Rest up, come back next season, blah, blah, blah. I think a lot of these people really don't understand how professional athletes are wired, how important their own, you know, their mental well-being is, and how important their ability to play and play at a high level is such an integral factor of their mental well-being. So, you know, obviously with Carey Price, we're not only talking about his physical health this season. It's obviously, you know, he went through, he spent a lot of time working on his mental health early in the season. And it is something that I think people underestimate. It's just, and when the one time he's spoken to us and he was asked this question, he said, you know, it's a big part of my identity. I don't remember the exact quote, but he said it's a big part of my identity being a pro hockey player and playing hockey. And it's something that he wants to get back. And so I think the value here is that, you know, Carey Price going into the offseason needs to know to some extent that he can still play and that he can get through games and not get hurt, that he can physically withstand it, and that he still has that part of his identity. I think it's very important, and I think not enough people realize that when you look at the big picture and say, well, what's the point? They're not making the playoffs, and frankly, we'd rather they lose than win, and so we can get better draft odds, and he might win some games, blah, blah, blah. There's a very human side to this, and it'd be worth, I think it's important to point out that people should take that into account because it's important.
Yeah, I spoke to Jake Allen about that on Monday.
I don't think anyone would have blamed him if he packed it in for the year. You know what I mean? He's tried and tried and tried, but look, I knew he wasn't going to pack it in. I knew he wanted to play. You know, he's reaffirmed me that he wanted to play, and he's pushed the limits as much as he possibly could. And, you know, I think there's probably a lot of people on the outside that thought he was done for the year, but, you know, I knew he was going to come back. He's going to play, whether he plays five games or three, I don't know, whatever it is. But I think it's just that mindset behind it that he is a competitor. And if I was in his shoes, I'd want to do the same thing. I wouldn't want to go 5 months of sitting there and wonder, do I still got it, or, you know, what's the deal here? And, you know, it's this whole crazy season that we've had. He's had some ups and downs, and now he's going to get a chance to prove that he's still the carry of carry. And, you know, obviously just, if I was in that shoes, it would be some rust, but, you know, I think it's just to prove to himself that if that was me, I'd want to prove to myself that, you know, I did all this work, you know, it wasn't going to be for nothing. I was going to come back and prove to this organization that I'm still here. And I'm sure that's probably what he's same way he's thinking.
So, I mean, these two guys, they talk to each other. Obviously they have, they've got a relationship, and B, they're wired the same way because those guys are NHLers. And most of the time, you know, they're fired by the same sense of competition. And Price, despite his, you know, low-key, laid-back demeanor, has got this competitive fire in him. And you're exactly right to point out the situation from a few years ago, because it's really, as the saying goes, it's deja vu all over again. Mm-hmm. And so he's going through this again because he doesn't want to spend the summer wondering if, you know, what, how is it going to be the next time that I play a game? Will my knee buckle up? Is it going to swell? Can I make those movements and make those saves without having to think about it and having this thought in the back of my mind, or, you know, a cloud on top of my head that, you know, am I going to be okay at the end of this game? So I think that if he plays five or six games, I'll go on a wager here, but I wouldn't bet. No, but my guess is that he might come back next week. That's what I'll say. My bet will be next Monday against Winnipeg. That's what I'm saying. And yeah. So if he plays, let's say, five or six games, that's going to be huge for him, because in the span of five, six games, your body can tell you if you're okay or if there's reason to be concerned. And if he's healthy, then it opens up, it enables the Canadians. It's not just Carey Price. It's also the Canadians who need those answers.
Yeah.
Because there's a tons of planification or planning going forward that depends on the health of Carey Price. So mm-hmm. they Kent Hughes wants those answers every bit as much as Carey Price.
Yeah, 100%. And they really, they do need that piece of information going into the offseason, not only for the reason that I mentioned, which is, you know, if teams are interested in trading for Carey Price, those teams would need that information of him playing five or six games and seeing how he does, seeing how he comes out of it, if he comes out of it healthy. But the Canadians themselves, because, you know, obviously trading Carey Price would not be simple. And we're not even 100% certain that that's something that they would want to do, considering they would probably have to eat some money on that eat a significant portion of that contract for the next 4 years. 4 years? And yes, 4 years. Sorry. And so not only eat that money on the contract, but also, you know, not get the type of return that you would expect for someone of Carey Price's stature, you know? And so the combination of that is really would really just be a cap move. Whereas the alternative, if you have a healthy Carey Price, is you don't have dead money on your cap for 4 years. You have a pretty good goalie, pretty darn good goalie, who's proven in playoffs the last several years that he plays his best when the games truly matter. You have that player. It's obviously at an unreasonably high salary, but you know, I think the Canadiens would be open to working around that salary if they could have a combination of Carey Price and Jake Allen in net going forward, at least for one more year. And then see what happens as far as both Carey and how Caden Primeau develops in that time, how maybe Samuel Montembeau develops in that time. Really, that wouldn't be something they would have to worry about until the end of next season if they were to keep Carey Price. So that, those five or six games that he would play, if it's that number, maybe it's more, maybe it's less, but whatever he is able to do in terms of coming back would provide an enormously important piece of information to the Canadiens organization, on top of to Carey Price himself, but to the Canadiens organization in terms of how they go about their offseason planning. Because frankly, you know, their cap situation in this offseason is tight. It's delicate. You know, it's really not going to be easy to do a lot of the things that they plan on doing. They already have, for next season already, they have 17 players under contract and they have $81.5 million devoted to the cap. Now that obviously includes Shea Weber, but it's a lot. It's a lot of money. And one quick like accounting note with Carey Price. There was a scenario earlier in the season where if he were to return the Canadiens would have had to loan a whole bunch of people to Laval and have them go through waivers and what have you. It turns out at this stage of the season that they wouldn't necessarily have to do that, but the guys that they would have to send down are all the waiver, exempt guys. So not all of them, but like, you know, Justin Barron would have to go down. Corey Schoeneman would have to go down. And I think Jesse Ylönen would have to go down in order to make room for Carey Price. But the possibility that exists now is that they could also put Jonathan Drouin on LTIR, which if he needs season-ending surgery on his wrist, which would then allow them to maybe not send at least not all of those players down to Laval in order to make the cap space to incorporate Carey Price into the lineup.
Mm-hmm. There are many options when it comes to Carey Price, many possible scenarios. And I'd be curious to hear you on this, because there are the likelier scenarios and there are the better scenarios. Because, I mean, one of them is him coming back healthy and remaining the Canadiens goaltender in for the next few years. There is him being traded and the Canadiens retaining no money on his contract. He could be traded and the Canadiens retain a certain amount of money. God forbid things could derail and he would end up on LTIR, like Shea Weber. I mean, it's not something we want to see happening. But right. I mean, after the way things went with Shea Weber, I mean, it's a possibility. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Canadiens, you know, retaining the maximum possible on his salary and basically give him away in the process and getting not much in return. So those are five different possibilities. What do you see as the likelier one in those?
The one that you mentioned where he gets traded with no salary retention, I have a lot of trouble believing that that's a possibility. I think whichever team trades for him is taking a significant roll of the dice. Even if Carey Price comes back and plays a few games and shows that he's healthy, you know, the fact that this has happened twice now, where what was originally seen as a minor knee injury or a minor knee procedure turned into this long, extended, drawn out recovery process. And so there's no reason to believe that the next time Carey Price hurts his knee, it won't be the same thing. You know, this is kind of an established, pattern to some extent with Carey Price's lower body. And, you know, he had a hip issue in the off season. And this is a guy who's a very large man. I mean, which most people listening to this podcast haven't had the opportunity to do, but if you've never stood next to Carey Price, it's hard to fully grasp just how much meat is on that body, how big he is, and the way he plays a position. You know, Brendan Gallagher talking about his power going from side to side, his push from one post to the other, like just the sheer thrust that he's able to generate puts so much torque on the joints of the lower body, hips and knees in particular, that over time, game after game, practice after practice, training camp after training camp, those things wear down. And so any team trading for him has watched how it's played out the last two times he hurt his knee. And so that's a big risk. So to take that risk and also add the risk of taking on the full $10.5 million cap hit is something that I just cannot see happening. I think the Canadiens would have to eat at least $4 million of his contract to move him. That's my opinion. And Carey Price would have to want to move. And so they have to find a team where Carey Price would want to go, which adds another wrinkle to it. And you really, when you look around the league, there's maybe one or two possibilities out there that I can think of. Edmonton and Colorado are the two places I think would make some degree of sense where Carey Price would have a chance to win. So he would agree to go there. And especially in Edmonton being closer to home or being, you know, somewhat in his part of the country, would probably be of some interest to him as well. And playing with Connor McDavid, if they can make it work cap wise, but I don't think in both those cases there's no way either of those teams could make that trade without the Canadiens retaining a significant amount of money. So, but I still think the likeliest scenario is that he doesn't get traded, to be honest. I think he winds up staying in Montreal until either he can't play anymore or until his contract runs out. Like what I think is the most likely thing to happen here.
Right. A little tidbit regarding his contract. I mean, he'll never be available at a discount. That's for sure. But he's at the halfway point in his contract. He's ending the fourth season out of an 8-year deal. And so even though he's at 50% of his 50% of the way, he's earned 63% of the money that he's supposed to earn. So right. his real money that he's going to earn, his total salary, is going to be less than his cap hit for the next 4 years. So I think it's interesting. This year, in total salary, he makes $13 million.
Yeah,
and he's not going to make more than 8.5 in any of the remaining 4 years. So I don't know if that makes him a tiny bit more palatable for certain organizations. I don't know. It remains a fit issue, you know, trying to find a destination that works financially for the other team, another team that would trust his health enough that considers that he's the missing link for that team. The Canadiens would want to have an asset for him. I don't think that they're just going to, give him away. Uh-huh. Because, might as well keep him otherwise. And if he gets hurt again, well, he's on LTIR, and then you don't suffer the burden of that huge cap hit. So I think that what you want to avoid, basically, is giving him away and retain half of the salary. So that's what you want to avoid.
Well, I think that the salary retention would require some sort of significant return, either being a player, a young player, draft picks, what have you. But yeah, I think the salary retention would mean that not literally get, and I agree with you, I don't think the Canadiens have any interest in giving him away. If he gets traded, they're going to want something in return. Otherwise, they'll just keep him. I think that's a fair assessment of what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So speaking of delicate trades, we thought it would be interesting, considering we've talked about Brendan Gallagher on this podcast, we've talked about Carey Price, sort of the third horseman for the Canadiens over the past several years was obviously Captain Shea Weber. And so,
Isn't there supposed to be four horsemen?
Yeah, so he's the third.
Okay, third.
I guess, okay. Yeah. We'll just cap it at three. Maybe the fourth was Mark Bergevin. I don't know. So like, and which is kind of fitting because, you know, it's sort of, there's sort of a passing of the torch going on here. It's sort of kind of the past four horsemen for the Canadiens. But in Shea Weber's case, there were reports. I heard independently that the Canadiens were extremely close on a deal with the Arizona Coyotes, to get Shea Weber's contract to Arizona. I'm not quite sure on the parameters of that. There might have been other players involved going from the Canadiens to Arizona, from what I heard. But that got, obviously, they got sort of beat to the punch there by Winnipeg, who traded Brian Little's contract, who unfortunately will never play again, to the Coyotes. It's a unique kind of situation in the sense that, Arizona's kind of the only team who's in this business right now, this business of cap space brokering, if you will. So if it's not them, do you see a scenario where where they managed to get Shea Weber's contract moved to maybe another team, or maybe they can still do it with Arizona? Like, what do you think the chances are of that happening this offseason?
Well, I think it can still be done with Arizona. Mm-hmm. I think that their leverage, their bargaining power is just not as good as it was before, because the Coyotes need Weber less to achieve their goal. So I think that they would be interested in Weber if it brings them something. But, reaching the cap floor, I think that we'll have a better idea after the free agency market is open. You know, sometimes we always talk about trades around the draft, but this is a trade that I see happening after free agency, after the Coyotes have determined what sort of player are we able to attract to come and play in our 4,000 capacity
room. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What's in the state? I could just
see them. I could just see them touring free agents around their facilities and being like, "Oh, here's, you know, here's the student section."
That's it. Yeah. That's it. That's where your dorm is.
That's right. Here's the beer garden. This is where the funneling section is. But anyhow, yes. Go on. That's it.
we're poking fun on the Arizona Coyotes. Yeah. They're an easy target.
The point being that they're not signing free agents this offseason. Like, let's be honest. Like, no free agents.
They're going to sign guys that need to, you know, resurrect their career. Exactly. But these guys are not going to beef up their salary cap one bit. They're going to come, you know, at $1 million, because if they could earn $2 million in Arizona, they'd probably accept $1.5 million to play in a more competitive team.
Yes.
Under the current circumstances, I think that the day will come where the Coyotes will be a decent hockey team. But for the time being, I think that they might go after more college free agents. They might get those guys that try to get a new win in their career. But I think that it's once the dust has settled and they have, like, they look at their bottom line and say, what do we miss? What do we need in order to meet the cap floor? Because we always saw the cap floor. It's as if it was a hard thing to reach. Over time, teams have not had any issues reaching the cap floor. But I think that it could be an issue for the Coyotes, especially when you look at the number of guys who are becoming UFAs. You need to replace those guys. So, but I think that Brian Little has relieved some of that pressure for the Coyotes, so it's less urgent and necessary for them to make that deal. Maybe the Canadians got greedy and thought that they would, you know, they were negotiating in a position of advantage towards the Coyotes. I still think that it's a deal that could be mutually beneficial for those two organizations. So I would expect that it could be revisited over the summer.
Right.
If not, it, you know, you look at the Buffalo Sabres, they also have many guys that are becoming UFAs at the end of the year. They don't have necessarily, you know, huge guys to re-sign, you know, that would ask for, you know, a huge raise. And it's been in the past, it's been also a difficult destination, place for players to, it's been difficult for the Sabres over time to attract players to Buffalo. So,
well, let's
you, just, you put those, I, yeah. So yeah, that's why.
I mean, let's look at Arizona's situation a little more closely, if you will. Sure. So they do have a bunch of UFAs, but no one of great significance. Anton Stralman probably being, and Phil Kessel, Louis Erickson, you know, the infamous Jay Beagle who make counts for $3 million against the cap. Thank you, Jim Benning. You know, they're all UFAs, but I think more importantly to the Coyotes is, you have Lawson Crouse as an arbitration eligible RFA who's having a breakout season before his season was ended by injury. And two other kind of important young players for the organization, Christian Fisher and Barrett Hayton, who would be up for raises of varying degrees, but not massive raises. But still, I think in Krause's case, I think he could expect a decent bump from his $1.5 million. So all things considered, as of right now, the Arizona Coyotes have 15 players signed next season, and they have a $47.4 million a $48.4 million cap hit. The salary cap floor this year was $60.2 million. The upper limit's going up by $1 million. So I guess let's ballpark it and say the floor goes up by $1 million. So that goes to 61.2, even though I don't think the formula works out quite that way.
No, it'll be more like 60.5 probably.
Right. So the the Arizona Coyotes still need to add roughly $12 million in salary over the offseason with eight players to sign. So it's not going to be that difficult. I mean, if they fill out to 23 players, you know, you're looking at roughly $1.5 million per player. The thing that makes Shea Weber attractive to a team like Arizona, because as you mentioned with Carey Price's contract, you know, Shea Weber's contract, like Shea Weber's salary this year is $6 million. Next year it goes down to $3 million. And then for the final 3 years of his career, it goes down to $1 million. So he's only owed another $6 million over the life of his contract for 4 years. And for that $6 million, you're getting in return a $7.8 $6 million cap hit for 4 years. And that 4 years basically would align with Arizona's timeline if they're able to get this arena deal approved, their timeline to move into their new building, which is, I guess, a time over which saving money on a cap hit would probably be somewhat attractive to them. So, you know, that's a factor, I think. But there's also, I think, as you pointed out, and it's quite clear when you look at their numbers, is that the Brian Little deal makes this less urgent for Arizona. But the attractiveness of Shea Weber to Arizona is the difference between the actual money being paid and the cap hit that they're getting. So, so maybe there is still a fit there. But that's not the only team, as you mentioned, Buffalo. I think, you know, depending on their offseason, is Ottawa a possibility? I don't know. Maybe. I doubt it, but possibly. There's a couple of other teams that are in decent, you know, that have the room cap-wise to make it happen. So we'll see how it goes.
But it's just, I think that you can find spots. You can find destinations for Weber. The thing is, the less the team needs it, the more the Canadians have to give on top of Weber. A team that needs the Weber's contract could have been willing to give an asset for him, but yeah. I think that if you look elsewhere, it's more the Canadians that might have to give up something because it's.
Well, I don't think anyone actually needs him anymore. That's the thing. I don't think.
Yeah.
Well, need being a very strong word, right? I mean.
Yeah.
I think it's a situation where the Canadians are going to have to give something for sure. I don't see any scenario under which he would be traded where the Canadians are not giving up some sort of asset, some sort of future asset, be it a draft pick or a prospect, to get a team to eat his contract. That's just not in the cards. Even if a team needs him to hit the floor, I still think that he would be sent along with an asset or two to make it more palatable. But anyhow, it's kind of talking about, you know, it's funny. We've talked about Brendan Gallagher, Carey Price, and Shea Weber.
The old guard
and about the trade possibilities for each of them. And it sort of underscores where the Canadians are right now. You know what I mean? It's Cole Caulfield scored again last night. He's got 16 goals in his rookie year. 15 of them have come under Martin Saint-Louis. So, you know, in roughly 25 games, I think it's exactly. So that's 15 goals in 25 games under Martin Saint-Louis. Yeah. Like 20 goals for him in his rookie year is really not. It's within the realm of possibility for him to score four more goals in the next 12 games, considering he scored 15 and 25 under Martin Saint-Louis. I think it's a very possible thing. Nick Suzuki having just an incredible second half of the year under Saint-Louis. You know, it's the second half of this season has shown to what extent the Canadiens are moving to a different core. And it's amazing how quickly, you know, listen, it was less than a year ago that the Canadiens were playing for the Stanley Cup. It's like with Carey Price and Shea Weber at the center of it, you know, and it's just amazing how quickly things change in the NHL now. And that's what it's got me thinking, like, you know, everyone's talking about, you know, this is a rebuild. It's going to take some time. You got to be patient. You got to stink for a while. You got to draft well, this and that, and all that thing. All that's probably true, except for the stink for a while part, in my opinion. I don't know if that's entirely true in the NHL anymore. I think I think things can change relatively quickly in the league now. And it's what's going to make this offseason so fascinating, because I think Jeff Gorton and Ken Hughes think that way as well. I don't think they're in it for a hugely long rebuild.
No, and I'm not even sure if it's calculated in terms of how long it's going to take or how big of a rebuild. I think that their mindset is more finding efficiency on each of the contracts that they have. Uh-huh. I think it's more about having salary sanity. And that's something that if you strive for that, one gets connected with the other. And uh-huh. it's you, because then you have guys that are performing, that are of the right age group, but it's not always about let's go through a cycle where we'll get some draft picks. All those guys will come to maturity at some point. We'll have a window of 3-4 years at that time down the road. They're not into that mindset at all. But I think that it's more like, how can we, they want to be competitive as soon as possible. But in order to do that, they need to optimize their roster. And in that sense, it might not be a rebuild, but it's definitely there's going to be turnaround, because this roster needs optimizing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, I think it's fair to assume that Jeff Petrie's likely to get moved in the offseason. But, you know, you just look on the blue line, you want optimization. Like, Justin Barron's got 2 more years on his entry-level contract at $925 a year. I mean, Jordan Harris has another year at $842. I mean, at least one of the two, I would imagine, will break camp with the team next season. You know, they're young players. You know, you'll still have Cole Caulfield on an entry-level contract next year. Jesse Ylönen, who's showing really his NHL potential over the last few games, like really looking like an NHL player for the first time, confident and just optimizing his strengths at the NHL level, and really looking like a solid potential replacement for Arturi Lehkonen, frankly, as a guy who can forecheck better than I thought he could, has incredible speed, probably a faster skater than Lehkonen, and a great shot. So, you know, you're going to have more of these entry-level contracts entering the team, and I think the Canadiens are committed to making room for these guys to play, because they know that when they're actually competing for a Stanley Cup, or when they're in a position to compete for a Stanley Cup, these are the guys that will form the core. So when you talk about that salary efficiency or sanity or whatever word you want to use, I think the Canadiens are prepared to live with, you know, rookie mistakes if it means having more entry-level contracts on the books and developing towards becoming a more competitive team.
But you said, you know, we spoke about the possibility of the Canadiens trading Price, Weber, Gallagher. We actually did not address Gallagher's likelihood of being traded. And because, frankly, I don't feel, from everything I've been hearing from management, from Martin Saint-Louis, and to a certain extent, I don't get the sense that Gallagher is eager to leave either. Mm-hmm. So I don't really see a desire for the Canadiens to move away from Gallagher at this point.
Well, neither do I, because I think the same thing applies to what we said about Price, is that you're at this point, you would be trading him at a loss. You'd be trading, mm-hmm. you know, when Kent Hughes talked to us about not wanting to be a team that buys high and sells low, to do the opposite, to buy low and sell high, trading Brendan Gallagher right now would be the epitome of buying high and selling low. So is he going to live up to that contract in terms of goals and assists and numbers and play driving the way he did for most of his career? Probably not. Will he live up to that contract in some of the intangibles he brings to some of the young players that they're going to try to incorporate, the influence he can have on a Cole Caulfield, on a Jesse Ylönen, on any of the other young guys who are going to join this group over the next few years? Maybe. I think it's possible.
Well, that's expensive.
It's not solely intangibles. Like I think, as we discussed quite extensively, we're not counting out the possibility that Brendan Gallagher is going to find his game again. And obviously that's the most important part, because as we mentioned, he can't impart those intangible to those kids if he's not pulling his own weight on the ice. But the combination of the two, you know, you look at the game last night, like at the end of the game, Brendan Gallagher decides to how would you put it, execute a correction with Tim Stützle.
Settle a score.
Settle a score, but just, you know, teach him a lesson that, you know, writhing in pain on the ice to get a call is not something that he appreciates. And as he mentioned immediately after the game, it's something that he felt Tim Stützle has already established a history of doing. And he didn't feel that was right. And those are that game was lost. And that's just a competitiveness thing. That's a culture thing. You know, you can agree or disagree with his decision to go after him at the end of a game. And frankly, you know, we just saw sort of a far worse example of kind of the same thing with the Jay Beagle thing with Arizona and Anaheim, where, you know, he went after Troy Terry in a lost game at the end of a lost game over some perceived transgressions during the game that were kind of seen as unsportsmanlike, if you will. You know, I think this was a similar thing. An older player not appreciating a younger player being unsportsmanlike. And so, but still, it demonstrates the extent to which, or what the Canadians value, part of what the Canadians value in Brendan Gallagher. Obviously, the bigger part would be him scoring goals and being a productive player who can play kind of up and down your lineup. It could play different with different players. We'll see if that turns out to be the case. We don't have proof of that yet, because frankly, since Phil Deneau's been gone, it hasn't been very easy for Brendan Gallagher. But that other part of it, that competitiveness part, that culture part, is something that I think they value in Brendan Gallagher. So I agree that they're probably not looking to trade him, but you have to balance that with what you mentioned before, where they're looking for efficiency on their salary books. That's not going to be an efficient contract. Like I don't see how. Maybe I hope he makes me eat my words, but I find it difficult to see how Brendan Gallagher is going to make that contract look good for as long as it is.
Yeah, I think the way I see it, when Kent Hughes mentions that he doesn't want to you know, buy high and sell low, it's like when you got a used object. You can either, you know, sell it like in a garage sale, or you can go to Mr. Fix-It and recondition it. So I think that right now the Canadians, through Martin St-Louis, are doing a lot of Mr. Fix-It. And that's what they want to do, because the only thing, it can only be positive, because either the guy is rejuvenated or reconditioned and provides better services for the team, or it becomes a more attractive commodity for another team. So I think that's why, to go back to our initial point regarding Brendan Gallagher at the beginning of this podcast, I think that going through that rewiring will serve either the Canadians or another team. So instead of worrying about, you know, what he might look like down the road and how much of a burden his contract will be, well, if next season he can be a decent player again, well, he might interest the Canadians more, but he'll be of more interest for more teams too. So I think that's it's a win-win situation in that sense.
Do you remember when? Do you remember when Claude Julien first came and he said, you know, I fix things.
Yeah,
that's true. And that clip got played over and over again, and you know, it's. You're right. Like Martin St-Louis being brought in to fix things, but you know, as we learned when we sat down with him, you know, several weeks ago now, where he believes, you know, he said the one thing he did at an elite level as a player was get better. He didn't have elite level skills. He wasn't an elite skater. He wasn't an elite shooter. He obviously didn't have elite size or physicality, but what he admits himself was that he was elite at getting better. And what we're seeing right now, and we're seeing some evidence of it with some of the players here, is that he's proving to be adept, at least. I'm not willing to call him elite, but he's proving to be adept at identifying areas in individuals' games that he can improve just by adding little pointers here and there at practice. You watch him in practice. He spends time with individual players showing them little tricks. You know, I saw him doing it with Justin Barron down in Florida at one point. Sort of showing him how to walk the blue line, how to get a shot through, how to identify a shooting lane, how to shoot, fake a shot to create a shooting lane. And the interesting part of that was when St. Louis did it, he turned his stick over and became a righty shooter, because Barron's a righty shooter. And so it's just little details like that, but he spends time with individual players working on things that he's noticed in their game, either through video or watching live, where you can make little incremental improvements in little key little situations in a game. And really those key little situations in a game are the details that make a difference at the NHL level, because everyone's so good. And so you need to take advantage of those leverage points in a game where a decision that could be made just a half second quicker, or that could be something that the opposing team would not expect, based on that coaching, would be extremely valuable. And so what's happening with Brendan Gallagher now, you know, it's going to be fascinating to watch how he finishes this season. If he's able to incorporate these new elements into his game, looking for soft areas of the ice, becoming a bit more of a shooter, and less of the grunt work that he's been doing for most of his career. Like, I'm going to be really fascinated to see A, how he's able to do it, if it's difficult for him, and B, if it actually helps his game and helps him survive shifts. You know, I mean, it's in the end, we don't see him like just trudging back to the bench at the end of a shift completely exhausted. That could make him a better player. And so that's something definitely to watch out for over the last dozen games here.
I like the odds of my guess regarding Price coming back against Winnipeg. He was on the ice today for the optional practice. He's traveling with the team. He's not going to play against New Jersey. He's not going to play in Toronto either. But he's traveling with the team. So if he ends up being like the backup, that would be even a step further. So it remains to be seen, but it's looking good for Price. Arpin, thanks a lot for today. Thanks a lot for all those podcasts this season. Actually, you know what? I'll be back in a few weeks and we'll have more of these podcasts. So,
yes.
And everybody, thank you everybody for tuning in week after week. We really appreciate that you, you know, you follow us on this, this fun journey that is the Athletic Support. That's fun. I like it.
Yeah. But do continue tuning in. Marc-Antoine won't be here for the next 3 weeks, but I will. And I might have some special guests. And just another friendly reminder to finish off the podcast. A, if you haven't given a rating or a review of this podcast on whatever platform you're listening, please do. It helps the podcast get out to other people and gets the algorithm machine going so that more people can find this podcast. And if you enjoy it, we would really appreciate it. We do read all your comments, so please give us a review and a rating. And secondly, if you have not subscribed to The Athletic, you still can at an excellent discount. But there's always a discount for our listeners. You can go to theathletic.com/athletic support. That's theathletic.com/athletic support to get a discount on a subscription for new subscribers on a subscription to The Athletic, which is very worthwhile, especially with baseball starting up very soon. So thank you very much for that. Thank you, Marc-Antoine. Bon voyage to you. I will miss you. We will all miss you. And look forward to your return.
Yes. All right, bye-bye, everybody.
All right, I am now recording.
Excellent.
On my end. So just to get it on the recording, screw you, Danielle, and your lack of faith. God. Oh, okay. like to get some support from our producer every now and then.
Yeah.
Crying out loud.
No, but she's no.
No, no. She's still laughing.
She's winging, She only thinks that we're winging it, then we're not getting, we're not prepared. As if we're not professional.
As if we're not professional podcasters, exactly. With years and years of experience in doing this. So yeah, that's us. Here we go.